Hey there, sports history fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
I've had the opportunity to meet several of my favorite NFL players and coaches over the years, men like Frank Wycheck, Eddie George, Jeff Fisher, and Mike Vrabel top the list of men I've had the chance to talk to and get pictures with. But what if your favorite NFL player was also your dad or maybe even a relation to you? What then? Today, we're going to talk to Ken Riley II, a man whose father, Ken Riley, played cornerback for the Cincinnati Bengals. While that is awesome in and of itself, that doesn't paint the entire picture of how great Ken Riley's career was. The number 65 does. Join us today as we talk to Ken Riley II and see what makes football family to him. If you want to join us at this podcast and talk about what makes football family to you, you can reach me on Twitter at Jeremy_McFarlane or at the Football is Family podcast Facebook page. We'd like to welcome everybody back to Football is Family podcast, and I have a special guest, and I'm really pleased for this. If you would like to introduce yourself, my friend.
Well, my name is Ken Riley II. Ken Riley Sr. was my father, who played cornerback for the Cincinnati Bengals from 1969 to 83. At the moment of his retirement, he was fourth all time. And now it's currently fifth all time on the interception list.
Now, I'm going to tell you how deep of a research I did, Mr. Ken. I went on my Madden game, and I wanted to see what it was like. And if you have any of the Maddens for the last 5 years or so, they have the all-time list of passers and runners. You know, Peyton Manning's up there. Emmitt Smith is up there. Walter Payton is up there. And I said, I want to see if Ken Riley is up. He is number five. And it's amazing because I want to list the people who are behind him, okay? Mm-hmm. At 65 interceptions, he is above Charles Woodson, who is just one of the best cornerbacks.
They're actually tied. They tied. He has 65.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Okay. Ronnie Lott. Who, if you don't know who Ronnie Lott is, he is probably one of the scariest men to ever play safety ever.
Right.
Ed Reed, and many of you probably will know who Ed Reed is. These are men that your father either tied or beat. And the problem is he is not in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Now, when I was looking at this, I pride myself for knowing a little bit about every team, but I fall short in Cincinnati. My memories of Cincinnati was probably 86, 87, 88.
Okay.
With Icky Woods, James Brooks, and Boomer Esiason. Can you give us a little bit of history for your memories of Cincinnati?
Well, as long as I can remember, I remember Cincinnati. You know, started with Ken Anderson. I can remember Ken Anderson playing, but the guy that my father always talked about, saying that if he wouldn't have gotten injured, he would have definitely won a couple of Super Bowls for the Bengals, and that was Greg Cook.
Yes,
he said that he was. He was a great player, and unfortunately, he got hurt before his career was able to really take off. But as far as the Bengals, that was my era with Ken Anderson, who also deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. Isaac Curtis,
yes.
Reggie Williams, Ross Browner, Jim LeClair. Like I said, I can pretty much go on and name a lot of the players just because, you know, I just analyzed them growing up.
Now, I heard your interview, and this is how we got in contact on the Football History Dude with Arnie.
Right.
And he said that you lived at this time in Tampa Bay. Am I correct?
It's outside of Tampa, about 40 miles outside of Tampa, because both my mother and father, they're from that area of Central Florida. So we would remain at home, and he would just, during the season, he would be in Cincinnati. And, after the season, that was our home. So
did you get to spend any time around the facilities up at Cincinnati?
I did. So for Thanksgiving, I still have some of the balls where the signatures of a lot of the guys. So like Thanksgiving, we were out for a week. We would always go up to Cincinnati, and, so I would get to go to the facility when they have practice and, just hang out for that time. So it was definitely some good memories.
Now, I ask my guest about Thanksgiving memories, and this would be yours, that you get to see your dad doing what he did great. And who else did you get? If you could tell us one person that you were glad to meet during that time, I mean, that you could say that this was a person I was happy to meet, who was that?
I don't know if I can point out one, because it was kind of, I guess, normal for me at that point, because like I said, he played for 15 years. So I basically just grew up around and seeing a lot of the players. But some of the players that he were closer to, like I said, was Reggie Williams. That was his roommate, was a linebacker, when they were out on the road. And I actually got the chance to work for him at the Wild World of Sports, where they're playing the basketball is going now. So he was the president. So Isaac Curtis, Lewis Breeden, who was the other corner, and as well as Lamar Parrish. So a lot of the secondary guys, a lot of the defensive guys, they kind of come to mind a lot just growing up, just because, like I said, he played defense.
Now, your dad had probably the coolest nickname ever.
Yeah.
Can you tell everybody what that was?
The Rattler.
Now, why is that?
Well, I guess it's kind of twofold, because that's actually where I went to school as well. We went to Florida A&M University, and the mascot was the Rattlers. And so going up to Cincinnati, they called him the Rattler. And also because he kind of strike like a rattler, like you mentioned earlier, how he was known for like undercutting the receiver when they're in the air. So that nickname kind of fit him.
Now, if you haven't seen Ken Riley play football, which many of you probably haven't, you can go on YouTube and look. The one thing about the plays that I've seen your father do, again, he wasn't the fastest, although he was incredibly fast, but he was smart. And I'll tell you an interesting fact that I found out looking up Mr. Ken Riley about his info. But he would play the receiver like he knew what they were doing, and there's a reason for that, wasn't there?
He was definitely a student of the game. My father was actually a quarterback coming out of college, so he was definitely familiar. I think that probably played a lot in him being able to read offenses, because he played offense, and so it kind of translated once he became a defensive back. But he was definitely a student of the game. He actually kept a playbook of the wide receivers that he would play on a yearly basis. And so I think that also just translated to him being able to make the plays that he did.
You have to be smart and skilled in order to play, you said, 15 years. Because right. Any of you who are on the wrong side of 40 like me, know that you're not as fast as you used to be. You have to be right. smart when you play that. And but he also, and I thought this was incredibly awesome, he was a Rhodes Scholar hopeful.
Yep.
Now, that is impressive, because I think that doesn't happen very often for people to be able to go and become a Rhodes Scholar.
No, he was well-rounded, and that's one of the things he emphasized with myself as well as my sisters. And that's one of the things I really admired about him, is that, like I said, he was a student, a definition of a student athlete. Not only was he a great football player, but he also was a great student. And I try to tell my kids the same thing, that, you know, you need to put just as much effort, you know, off the field as you do on the field. And it translates. Like I said, I would say all of the great athletes, not only that's what separated the great athletes from the very good, because most of the great athletes are students of the game, from the Deion Sanders to the Michael Jordan to the LeBron James. Their IQ is off the charts when it comes to their particular sport. And I think that because once you get to the professional level, everybody has athletic ability. But what separates the good from the great, like I said, is what's between the ears and how they're able to, make plays and be in the right positions because they've studied and pretty much, like I said, they are students of the game.
Now, he was very smooth on how he would respond. It wasn't jerky. It was very smooth. And when I talk about smooth, if you've ever watched, and I believe Terrell Owens had this ability, he would show people how you would stop a route and hit that route, running a wide receiver route without being jerky. It was just smooth and gone.
Right.
And watching your father play for what I did today in a couple of days, he was very smooth. Nothing jerky about it. I even watched him block a kick. That was insane.
Yeah, and I think Lamar Parrish picked it up and went for the score.
But, I believe that was the one, yes.
Yeah, he was definitely a technician. He was a technician, and that really helped him extend his career. I think Coach Dick LeBeau, when he came, like I said, this last three or four years, he was like he had kind of gotten some bad habits, but then working with Coach LeBeau, that kind of put him back on the right track. But he was definitely a technician. And one of the things that I like to mention to tell a lot of people is that, yes, he's fifth all time, but he's number two as the only true corner. Because a lot of the guys Paul Krause is 81, but yeah, a lot of the guys on that list actually later on in their careers switched to from cornerback to safety. But he stayed on that corner the entire 15 years of his career. And he never, you know, transitioned to that safety position. And he probably could have played. I mean, he was always in great shape. And he always talked about Muhammad Ali went out on top. So he was like, he always wanted to go out on his terms. And but I definitely think he could have played a couple more years, even possibly switching over to safety. But he wanted to go out, like I said, still on top.
And he did. In fact, you brought up Coach LeBeau. Now, Coach Dick LeBeau was an amazing athlete in and of himself, you know, in his own right.
Yes.
I read here on Bengals.com that in your father's 14th and 15th year, Coach LeBeau basically talked him out of retirement and said, "You have to beat me when it comes to interceptions."
Yep. And I think he got his last two. He got a couple to pass and was in Minnesota. So that was like, a running joke of between the two, that he was able to catch Coach LeBeau on the interception record. So that was pretty neat.
Now I'm looking at the people in front of him. A guy that Night Train Lane, who I watched him play, and I would not want to go over the middle for him. I just wouldn't
do that. Oh, definitely. Yes.
You would get a clothesline. And they wouldn't do that today, but back then.
It was legal. It was legal during that time. I mean, it was definitely more, it was a rough, for a lot of things were illegal back then. So.
No, that would not work. And of course, Paul Krause, but I thought this was interesting, and I got some stats here I want to read. And please correct me if I'm wrong. Your dad played 207 games, which is incredible, around that. When he was 36 years old, he had 8 interceptions. And that was second in his career. I think he had 9 one year.
Yes, he actually had the record for like, 20-something years. And then I can't think of the corner that broke his record. But, yes, he had 9. And then his last 2 years, I think he had 8 And his last year, I think he had 8 interceptions and 2 touchdowns. Yeah, he only got better. I mean, at 36 to lead the AFC in conference in interceptions speaks volumes for itself and the consistency that he was able to do that for 15 years. So I have the most respect for him and what he was able to accomplish because growing up, like I said, just growing up, a lot of times you become immune to it. You think, oh, that's normal. And then when I actually started playing myself and realized that and the amount of work and the amount of, you know, time and the things that it takes to be great, my admiration just went through the roof because it's for one, it's a job and the amount of pressure though. People don't realize the pressure that these athletes are on because it's a job. You know, this is how you feed your family. So, and then playing for Coach Paul Brown,
yes,
who was like no nonsense. He was like, people could get cut at any time, you know, you could get cut at halftime. So you always had to, you know, bring your A game at all times. And so I just had the most, you know, I can't say it enough that, you know, that I had the most respect for him for all the things that he's accomplished and the way he carried himself even to this day. Like I say, he was to a fault sometimes. I think he was very too modest at times and never pushed his, you know, never gave himself enough credit, and that kind of hurt him to this day because of, like, if he would have been a little bit more flamboyant, definitely I think that he would have been in the Hall of Fame by now, but that's just not in his nature. He thought that his place will always speak for himself, and like I said, so I definitely respect that about him.
Now, you mentioned Lamar Parrish a moment ago. I looked at him, and I was like, wow, this guy is incredible too. From 1970 to 1976, he recorded 47 interceptions. So basically, if it wasn't for the Pittsburgh Steelers being in the same division that y'all were in, that Cincinnati's in, the Bengals should have been to multiple Super Bowls. You talk about Greg Cook. I believe he messed up his shoulder. You had an incredible team.
Well, what most people don't know that during those times with the Pittsburghs were winning those Super Bowls, the Bengals actually had a better win-loss record against the Steelers.
Really?
So, it wasn't that the Steelers – they could handle the Steelers. I guess it was a matchup thing, but it was outside of the Steelers where they had a lot of problems. But like you said before, like Lamar Parrish was – you know, he was one of the greats. He was definitely the Deion Sanders before Deion Sanders because he had some heck of a punt returns and kickoff returns. So that's what added to Lamar was that he also was that, you know, that kickoff and punt returner. So
now there is a game I want to ask you about and see if you have any stories. The Ice Bowl or it wouldn't be the Ice Bowl. I forgot the name of it right off the head.
The Freezer Bowl.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Your dad played in that.
Yes.
Did he tell you what it was like to play in that game?
Only that it was the coldest day of his life. And we just talked about it not too long ago that, you know, because he had a golf tournament, but he mentioned that, you know, the wearing of the pantyhose and just how brutally cold it was. And that was basically it, though, just a cold game.
Now,
nothing major.
When I was growing up here in Tennessee, and I'm going to get to a connection between you and me that you may not know about.
Okay.
When I was growing up here in Tennessee, whenever it would snow, which happens every now and then, a half an inch and the whole state shuts down. It's just how it is up here in Tennessee.
Right.
I'd call my buddies and we'd go to a park where I went to church close by and, you know, the ground be frozen and we'd tackle and, you know, we'd come back with cuts and that was fine at 16. At 41, if I did this, I would have to, you'd take me to the hospital. Okay.
Correct.
That is like 20 degrees. What I want to say is that game was in the negative.
Yes.
And you're out there playing football, and even Ken Anderson, good gracious, could he even throw that ball with that type of weather? It was amazing.
That was amazing. That's one of the things that he said, though. He was like, Ken was throwing through that cold weather like it was nothing. So that was an awesome game, definitely.
Did you get to go to the Super Bowl?
I did. I was there. Remember it vividly because it was definitely cold in Detroit. And,
yes,
you know, coming from Florida, a big shock, but very disappointing. I remember to this day, like, I can't believe Pete Johnson was able to get in from the, you know, the half-inch line, you know, so it was
that game changed a couple of franchises for a while, didn't it?
It sure did. I mean, it was – they took off from there. Hey, the 49ers, that was the first of many. So it was definitely like it changed a lot of franchise history.
Now, I want to kind of give you that connection that I'm talking about, okay? Mm-hmm. That you and I are connected by a city.
Okay.
All right. You go on, you Google your dad's name, and I found his picture. His hair, I have no hair, and I'm just amazed by
you see,
hair.
I don't have any.
I mean – There you go.
I'm there with you. So
I'm wearing my Titans hat to cover up my balding head here. But and yes, I am biased and I'm a fan. You're telling me these stories and I'm just geeking out here. Okay. But anyway, I Googled your dad and I found out he worked in a movie. He was in a movie. Now, am I right? He was in Coal Miner's Daughter.
Nah, I have no idea about that.
Okay.
You sure?
All right.
Because when I Google it, I saw some – I Google them from time to time, and I saw something that said Coal Miner's Daughter, but I don't know what that's about.
Okay.
I really don't.
Coal Miner's Daughter is the story of Loretta Lynn.
Uh-huh.
Loretta Lynn lives about a half a mile behind where I live.
Oh, wow.
So I'm like, the Hurricane Mills, Tennessee connection, that if your dad was in this, according to Wikipedia, which is never wrong,
I don't think that's true, though. Yeah, because I Googled that, and I saw Ken Raleigh come up, but I'm like, why is that coming up? That one that got wrong there.
Well,
he wasn't in that movie.
Well, okay, guys, that just deflated my – I was trying to make a connection.
I know.
Here.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. No, but I thought we just had a connection here, and now I just can't trust the Internet anymore.
Hey, sometimes they get it wrong, but you know.
It happens. Yeah. But I do have a couple more questions for you, and I appreciate your time today.
No, I thank you. Like I said, anytime I can speak about my father and help keep his name out there, and one day, like I said, eventually get him to the Hall of Fame, I appreciate you know, giving me the opportunity to speak about him. And you actually doing your homework. I know you're a fairly young guy, and that's the thing. Most people probably never heard of my father. Or, you know, a lot of the Cincinnati Bengals, and it's unfortunate, but there were some great players, and there still are some great players, and it's just sometimes, depending on the market and the media, and it's just one of those things. So I thank you for giving me an opportunity, and thank you for everything that you've said and you've been doing to support my father.
On my Twitter account, which I think we're friends now,
right.
We're going to push your father, and I believe he would be with the senior committee by now, wouldn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
They have where you can vote for different players, but I don't think we can vote for the senior.
No, you can't do it for the senior.
But we can have some influence. We're going to get your dad in, and when you're standing there at Canton, because I know you're going to be the one doing it, and you're fighting back the tears – because it's going to be a beautiful moment, my friend. It will be a beautiful moment.
Well, we put it on tape now. You have an open invitation. I work for Southwest, so I will get you to ceremony.
Now, look, I wasn't gunning for that, but I will take it. But I want you to realize that the Sports History Network, Arnie and me and everybody else on our group, you know, if we can be there, that'd be fine. I will pack my bags and head to Canton. But if we can't, you have us in spirit because, number one, people said it's longevity. It's not longevity. People had said that Cal Ripken, with his consecutive games, he only got the hits and the home runs for longevity. The guy was a warrior.
Right.
And the very fact that your dad did what he did, it doesn't matter if it was 15 years or 20 years. In that time, they passed the ball 45% of the time, which means in 45% of the time, your dad got that many interceptions. That takes more skill than what people are giving him credit for. So that alone, you should be proud, and I know you are. I know you are.
I really am. And like I said, thanks for the kind words. And also, they were playing 14 games at a time a lot of those years too. So, and I hear the longevity. I hear playing on the opposite side of Lamar Parris. And then my other argument is that, okay, what happened to all the guys that's playing on the other side of Deion Sanders? You know, you still have to be in – even if they threw at you every down, you still have to be in position to make the play. You still have to be – good enough to be a starter in the NFL for 15 years from 69. I mean, you still have to be that. That speaks volumes, you know, for the work he's put in and the consistency in doing something like that. So I just it really just bothers me when people, you know, make those arguments about, like, say, like the longevity or he played the opposite this person, and you know, just I don't understand it. Fifth all time. That has ever played the game. Number two, true corner. He never switched to safety. And I mean, 65, that's a huge number. And from me playing, I know how hard it is to get an interception.
With people passing more than they did before now, no one's going to hit that number for a long time.
Yeah, it's hard. It's definitely hard. It's not something that's just easy to do.
Now, you're. I did read this story, and I'm hoping that the internet is right with this one. You know, that your dad saved a certain commentator named Chris Collinsworth from a wild turkey chase.
Yes, I did hear that one. That was true. I don't know the details of that one, but that sounds like something he would do. You know, he would end up giving up the joke and, like, you know, letting him off the hook. So yeah, no, that was true.
Okay, see, so the internet is half right tonight. what I read about this is that Collinsworth was a rookie, and you haze a rookie. You don't try to hurt him; you haze him. And I'm sure your dad was hazed in 1969. That's just how that works.
Yes.
And he was going to pick up a turkey for Thanksgiving, and they were going to send him down in a no lane place, just get him lost.
Right.
And your dad stopped him. Now, in closing tonight, my friend, and I appreciate again your time down in Houston. Now let's get another connection, okay? Mm-hmm. That my Titans are from Houston.
Right.
There's the connection. I'm trying to find one, and I found one.
It is. Hey, that's definitely one.
I didn't have to reach too far for that one, but
not at all.
Give me a funny story to send us on our way, if you would, please.
Well, I can tell you about fate or things that really how it was just meant to be. So he told me, he told me a couple of stories, but this one is always sticks in my mind because I think that the opportunity meets preparation and sometimes just plain old luck. First game. You have to remember that my father never played defense. He was a quarterback in college. Definitely a prima donna, not very physical, but he said he was one of the first games, preseason games. He's the L9 or L7, but the gunner on the kickoff team.
Yes.
And he said that ball kicked off. And he said he just ran as fast as he could, basically his, you know, head in the air. And not intentionally, he said the running back turned toward him and they just collided.
Ah.
And he said the runner fumbled the ball. He said his helmet came over his eye and he really didn't know what happened. Came off the sideline and Paul Brown came to him and said, "You're a hitter and I like it." And he said that, you know, his eye was swollen, like huge eye, but never played anymore. But he was labeled as a, you know, hitter from that point. And from that point on, the rest is history. So a lot of times, like I said, luck meets preparation. It wasn't his intention to go and knock out that running back, kind of ran into him. But, you know, from that point on, he was, you know, he became a starter. So I thought that was like a great story.
How can we get in touch with you if we want to talk to you?
You got
a Twitter account?
Well, I don't usually use Twitter. I just kind of joined Twitter lately now, but I do have a Twitter account. I don't know what my Twitter is, though. What is my Twitter? I guess it's just Ken Raleigh, though. Ken Raleigh the second. Yeah.
All right.
My Twitter account is Ken Raleigh second, if anybody want to get a hold of me.
Let's get hashtag Ken Raleigh for Hall of Fame. Let's get that going. Hashtag Raleigh for Hall of Fame. And let's get that going.
Oh, man, that's awesome.
Yes, sir. And when we get back to normal and we see you up there, we're with you, my friend.
Hey, like I said, hey, mark it down. I told you, if it happens, please get with me. We'll make it work some kind of way.
Who dat?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
You take it easy, my friend, and I appreciate your time.
All right. Thanks for having me. Take care.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
The Pigskin Tales podcast is all about the lesser-known pro football players. Yes, there are stories about the ones we know, like Brad Tarkenton and Harold Red Grange. But have you ever heard of Ernie Nevers? How about Dave Osborne or even Grady Alderman? These men created their own path to the NFL. How did they do it? Listen to the Pigskin Tales podcast, now streaming on your favorite music platform. Go to pigskintales.com.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.